Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch, and one woman called her the over 40 guru to watch in 2017. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Hi guys, welcome back to Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host Amanda Thebe. I am joined again by my good friend Josh Hillis. Welcome back to the show, Josh.
Thanks, Amanda. Glad to be back.
So I recorded a show recently with Josh, which I thought was brilliant and valid, and it got published and I had some really great feedback from it. But what we've decided to do, Josh and I, together, is actually remove that particular episode and we're going to re-record again. And the reason is Josh felt that within his scope of practice and also mine, that we really needed to sort of not be comparing therapies. And that's what happened in the interview. And I don't think it came from a bad place. It came from a very authentic place, but really just to keep things completely true and real, we decided that the best thing forward was to re-record. And so that's what we're doing. So Josh, do you want to add anything to that just to explain it a little bit better?
Yeah, I just want to say that what we got talking about is there's some really, really cool research, or like acceptance-based behavioral weight loss versus standard behavioral weight loss. Where I went down a rabbit hole was these kind of come from certain therapeutic backgrounds. There's tools from certain therapies. But that being said, like these weight loss treatments weren't therapy, right? And so we borrow a lot of the tools that are actually designed to be used for general public, and the like Stephen Hayes, who created acceptance commitment therapy, wants to see used outside of therapy, and they're getting used in classrooms and workplaces and coaching. And so my big thing is I want to just keep it to the studies on weight loss that are things that are well within our scope of practice, and not get too deep into the therapeutic practices that they borrowed the tools from for this research.
See, that's exactly what I was going to say, but whatever, Josh. You said a little bit better. Now, so we were talking previously about this acceptance behavioral therapy with weight loss. And so can you just remind everybody what this study sort of explained to us and what we discovered by this study? Because it was really quite fascinating.
Yeah, so there was... There were two studies. One was a follow-up to the other. They were Mindr Health 1 and Mindr Health 2, and they were both randomized controlled trials using an acceptance-based methodology versus a standard methodology. And what they found was for people that have like the highest food reactivity, like they see food and they want it, or for the people that have like the most emotional eating issues or use food to cope with stress, the acceptance-based treatment made a bigger difference and people were able to maintain the results longer. That's what I was talking about, because like anything that works better for, like, my average client probably deals more with stress eating than they deal with getting their macros perfect.
So right? in this behavioral weight loss condition that they were under in the study, like, so was it based around like a specific diet, or was it really just about these protocols? Like how was it controlled? I just trying
yeah.
to
yeah. Okay, great question. So both treatments, both conditions, the standard and acceptance based, they counted calories, which I'm not super into, but that's what they did. They did if-then planning. Yeah. Which is actually like one of the most important things for producing results. Like, how do I get over this obstacle? And that shows up in almost every kind of behavioral weight loss trial that you'll see. And then let's see, they did calories, if then planning. Oh, and just basically just that strategizing. Yeah. So that showed up in both. That's what I was gonna say. Basic, like a gradual ramp up in like basic food skills, like cooking and shopping and those kinds of things showed up in both conditions.
Okay, so there was an element of planning that they maybe didn't have before as well.
Yeah, for sure. And so both conditions produced results, actually. It was just a difference in which one was better.
Right. It just was better just having this acceptance.
Yeah.
So when somebody from sort of our world, like the fitness world and the nutrition world, who aren't registered dietitians and who aren't psychologists, hear all of these terms and think, gosh, this could be really useful to my clients. You know, am I okay like talking like this to my clients? Am I okay to use this? And I heard you say that it's getting more generalized, like in classrooms and things.
Yeah.
Because the if then equals results is something that I use to its basic understanding. So can you like talk about that, how it could be applied?
Yeah. So and for people that don't know what I mean when I say if then planning, it means like if someone keeps hitting the same obstacle over and over again, then they go, if this happens, then I'm going to do this to get over it. Basically, you're just coming up with a strategy to overcome obstacles. In terms of scope of practice, I love this stuff because I actually feel like the acceptance-based treatment keeps us within scope of practice, because I'm not monkeying around with people's thoughts. I'm not like trying to change their mindset. I'm not trying to make them think more positively. I'm not trying to have them think different things. All I'm letting them know is you're normal. It's normal to have these thoughts. My other clients have unwanted thoughts. Sometimes they get sad and sometimes they get frustrated and sometimes they get stressed out, and that's all okay. And it's okay to feel like that. And we're gonna work on some skills that may help you be able to make good choices while you're having those feelings. But essentially the scope of our coaching conversation is the choices and working on skills. And in terms of the registered dietitian, and so I feel like that keeps us really clean on the psychology side. On the registered dietitian side, I don't get into what they should eat to be, you know, I really don't get into the content of their food very much. And I definitely don't get into their health, which may be like a weird thing to say. I don't get into that past, you know what, fruits and vegetables are healthy. Like that's about where I leave it. Mostly what we're working on is skills, like just like the way we work on skills in the gym, I'm working on skills like eating slower and noticing when you're full and, you know, eating satisfying meals and not snacking between meals. And waiting till they're hungry to eat. Those are all things that are well within our scope. We can coach skills. Yeah. I get nervous about, you know, really specific food recommendations, especially related to health.
Yeah, well, for sure. I think that's super important to make that clear delineation. And so when we come back to that study, what I'm interested in delving deeper into and see how this applies to this group of people is the emotional and stress eating clientele that we have. So how do we deal with those, or how do we give them strategies when they're like almost in an automatic way just reaching for food because it's their only coping mechanism they have?
That's a great setup, because that's exactly it. Food's the only coping mechanism, right?
Yeah.
And so acceptance-based perspective starts with the idea of the difference between clean pain and dirty pain. And so clean pain would be like everyone feels sad sometimes, everyone feels frustrated sometimes, everyone has unwanted thoughts sometimes. Dirty pain would be I feel sad and I'm going to try and fight being sad, or I'm going to try and stop being sad, or I'm going to try and force myself to be happy. And that leads to a certain amount of quote dirty pain, like essentially like unnecessary frustration because it doesn't work.
So under the dirty pain scenario, does that include guilt as well?
And this is one of those things where one of our coaches, Sarah, really gets into, like, one of her favorite things to talk about is like what would it look like to like forgive yourself. It's one of those things where, I mean, wow, guilt's a big subject, and like I love like Brené Brown's whole take on that, like guilt is actually okay. Guilt may be something sort of related to like, here's a commitment that I have in the world or a value that I have in the world, and I like let myself down. Versus like shame would be something like I'm bad because I did this. So it's cool to make that distinction. But yeah, it all comes back to how can I realize that these feelings are normal, and how can I make a choice that fits my values even though I'm having these feelings? And hey, is that Dan? Is Dan here?
Yeah, I don't know if he's, hold on, did he come on? Dan, yeah. Are you there, Dan? He just came on. I'm going to mute him just in case. Oh, that's it. So listen, guys, I know this is a really strange thing to say because we're recording, but Dan John just jumped on our podcast. in almost in stealth mode.
Didn't
say anything, just spied on us and went. That's okay. Secret. Okay, so back to you, Josh. Never mind about Dan John. So that's a good point. So Brené Brown is such a great one if only we could all think like her. But knowing that guilt is okay and it's valid.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really important is understanding that every single thought that we have that goes through our head is a valid thought. And yeah. I think having that moment of acceptance, understanding that the thoughts are completely valid, I think is like a huge epiphany that someone can have. It can just make just the whole situation that feels completely disastrous, like turning it back to me purely because of my experience. But when I was really struggling with depression through my menopause, I just was ashamed all the time and I was embarrassed and really just couldn't tell people. And then the minute I decided, enough of this, I have to be a bit more honest. One of the big things about me is I want to be truthful and authentic. And as soon as I started speaking about it and then just saying, listen, I have depression and this, and it just all of a sudden didn't ease my depression, but the guilt around it and the shame and the embarrassment and the taboo almost just disappeared. And it was quite an amazing thing that I realized. And I don't know if any of this applies to the work that you do.
Well, that's a really similar experience to what clients have, is that whatever feelings they have, they still have, but all of a sudden they don't have to expend all of their energy trying to fight them. And that's what emotional eating and stress eating really comes down to, is you're like, I'm having these emotions that I feel like I shouldn't have, and I'm going to try and suppress them with food. And unfortunately, food kind of works for a minute, you know. That's where we actually kind of get this this sort of break towards valued action, where if you don't have to suppress the feelings, if you don't have to fight them, and if you don't have to change them, then you don't have to emotionally. You can take some sort of some action that fits your values, some sort of action that's self-care. You can do something to actually take care of yourself, although that doesn't fix it. At least it fits your values.
Yeah,
right.
And that can be outside the scope of food, as I think you're saying, right? That thing, the thing that fits your values, the action doesn't have to be food related. I mean, it's not like you're saying, well, instead of reaching for that chocolate bar, Amanda, go and eat a banana instead. You're saying, you're actually saying, you know, have you thought about like doing something like different, like going out for a walk? Or it could be a number of things, right? It could be going getting your nails painted. It could be things that just make you feel important and good and fit your value system. Is that right?
Yeah, it could be going, like, I love going for a walk because it's so accessible. It could be meditating. It could be watching TV. It could be hugging your pet. It could be cleaning your bathroom. It could be, it's whatever is going to, it's a way to take care of yourself. And that's super individual. It's super, super, super individual.
Yeah.
But you just do something to take care of yourself. And that's not always appropriate in the moment. Like, you may be at work and your boss yells at you, and normally you would go to, you know, you would grab some candy off of the like office desk or go to the break room or whatever. And maybe you can go for a walk around the building, but let's say you can't. Let's say that what you have to do is just to work. You can actually, the other option besides like taking an action is actually just being present. So if you're at work, you could actually just be present with your work. Or if you're in a conversation with someone, you could be present in that conversation with someone. Or wherever you're at, you could actually just be where you're at. And again, like, you still have those feelings, but it turns down the volume a little bit to not spin them and fight them and suppress them.
Yeah, to acknowledge that you're pissed and you're mad and your boss is a dickweed.
But, yeah.
And all of, I didn't even know where that word came from. I've worked for a few dickweeds in my time, that's all. Because I've been there as well, and you get really, really frustrated and you feel like your head's going to pop off. And actually, that's how your head does feel. And it's okay to feel like that's so, so valid.
Yeah.
But it's trying to like just acknowledge that in the moment. So really
can I jump on one thing there? The thing that you said about acknowledging it is actually one of the biggest pieces. That's actually like the biggest mindfulness piece is to notice that you're having thoughts or to notice like what emotions you're having. A lot of our clients use a feelings wheel where they like pick from a menu, like what they're feeling. And the fact that they actually like label their feeling or label their thought as a thought gives them a little bit of distance where they can make a better choice. And so the acknowledgement piece is actually really huge.
Can you explain what a feelings wheel is? Because I feel like I'm missing out on something. I want a feelings wheel. It's not there.
if you Google feelings wheel,
yeah,
a bunch of them will come up. But what it is it's like a color wheel, but instead of colors, it has colors also, but instead of colors, it has feelings. So it gives you like a menu of feelings from like happy, sad, frustrated, angry, you know, like, but it's got a bunch. It's got like a bunch. So there's one thing that's really weird is that if you've gotten used to suppressing your emotions with food for a really long time, you may not even know what you're feeling. And so it's way easier to pick from a menu. It's way easier.
Isn't that interesting?
It's cool.
Yeah. Because that's the whole point. You were doing it in the first place, right? Because it's this autonomic expression that you've got. You've got emotion, and so you grab food and you don't have time to actually be present and to acknowledge.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So let me springboard off of that too.
Oh my God, it's so exciting.
I love it. So the automaticness, if we can separate the automaticness, that's everything. So if someone normally feels bad and they grab some food, if we can separate that by a minute, if we can separate that by a minute, we can extend that out to 5 minutes or whatever. But if we can just separate the automaticness, if they can take a minute to go like, oh, okay, wait. Normally, like, I feel bad, I grab food. Feel bad, grab food. It's like it's completely mindless. If we can put in just a little bit of time to be mindful, like a minute to be like, what am I feeling and what are thoughts I'm having? Like, oh, I'm having these thoughts, and oh, these thoughts are normal. Okay, what are my values? What are the actions that I've already outlined that fit my values that I would want to take right now? So.
Brilliant.
Separating the automaticity, it's huge.
And again, what now would, you know, what are my values? And like you said, that at the time and the circumstance around you, you may not be able to take an action from that value, but the action may just be to acknowledge and be present. So there's some real clear like steps in the process then that people can follow. And so this all leads on from the if then, right? So if this then, and so it's like breaking that down into these like finite steps. If this isn't like a coach that's listening and just like it's somebody like me who's sat at home and you know, and I know I struggle with emotional eating. So, and I can't afford a coach, can't afford to work with you, Josh, even though we all want to. What's the first thing you would say to me? What's the first thing you would say? Listen, Amanda, do you have to write things down? Do I need to just have more patience? What do you think is the most practical step for, you know, the everyday folk to do?
Can I give you a couple?
Yeah.
So it's my show.
You can do whatever you want.
Okay, cool. So the first thing that I would tell you is I would just tell you that, like, regardless of what our Instagram perfect looking world, you know, may present to you, it's totally okay to feel your feelings. It's totally okay to have feelings. It's totally okay not to be happy all the time. What we would work on would probably be three skills, maybe. I like 3 to 4 meals as sort of like a framework skill, where just to start, I want to make sure you're eating enough at meals that you can make it to the next meal. And so I want you to look at like let's have good, solid, balanced meals 3 times a day, or maybe 4. But let's eat at meals and let's have legit meals. And then we can separate out, okay, what are we snacking for?
That made me laugh. Let's have legit meals.
Well, for real though, right? Like if someone, so emotional eating, let's talk about how people put themselves in like a never-ending emotional eating cycle. They starve themselves at meals and then they like snap when they're stressed and eat a bunch of stuff, right? So they're snacking between meals because they're stressed out, but they're starving themselves at meals. So for real, let's have legit meals. And then that should be able to get us between meals. And then we can actually deal with, okay, you're having emotions or you're having unwanted thoughts. How do we deal with those? The way I like to deal with those is a metaphor called monsters on the bus. And monsters on the bus is just like you visualize, like, okay, I'm a bus driver and I'm driving this bus. And sometimes really cool passengers get on the bus and they're like, oh, wow, you look amazing today and things are great. You're really good at your job. You're wonderful. And those are the really cool passengers. We like having cool passengers, like happiness and joy and fun and play and feeling, you know, really like effective. But sometimes we get monsters on the bus. And the monsters are like, you look terrible and like you always fail at food and you did a terrible job today and like all those kinds of things. And those are the things that people normally try and suppress. But if we use this bus metaphor, we can look at like, okay, the cool passengers like Joy get on and off the bus whenever they want to. Well, the monsters kind of get on and off the bus whenever they want to also. And so if you are in the middle of the afternoon or like it's after dinner or whenever you normally get monsters, you could use this as this is like your framework to label like, oh, that craving is a monster. Like that thought that I'm ugly is a monster. And I'm having that thought and it's on the bus right now and it's going to get off whenever it wants.
Yeah.
But my job is to keep driving the bus in the direction of whatever my values are. And one of the things we would do, kind of like the feelings wheel, is I would give you a list of values and you can Google values lists and a ton will come up. And it can be easier to like circle from like this menu of values. And maybe your values are like courage and kindness, right? And you can actually be like, okay, what a kind thing for me to do right now, or what a courageous thing for me to do right now. And maybe on our coaching calls, we would outline some of those things ahead of time.
And but, I know those value lists, you can actually do like online.
Yeah, tests, they're everywhere.
And stuff, and they give you like, they assess, these tests assess what your value list is. And they assess what your values list are. There's a couple of free ones out there that are run by sort of like with study groups. And because I did it myself and the values that came up, I was like, I'm not sure I agree with those. But then when I looked at what the description of the value was, it completely was me. I think sometimes the terminology is just confusing, but I think those value lists are so great. And I actually have mine printed out on my computer. I see it. I look at it and remind myself. I think there's huge value in those value lists. Abundance for me. And I was like, but I don't feel like that's about myself. I think I give myself an abundance to people. But really, I think if you pull this back to your own personal worth and how you treat yourself, that's when these lists become more valuable, I think. So what do you think about that?
I think you completely nailed it. You know, like how many people like really, really value, like most of my clients like really value kindness to their family and to their friends, and they don't apply it to their own body at all.
Never. Yeah, almost never. Women are the worst as well, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where like you could look at that as almost like a filter of like, how would you treat a good friend, or how would you treat your daughter, or how would you want them to approach this?
Yeah, it's great. So the value lists, I think, are really good. And I've done the exercise now 3 times. I also have a menopause memory. So when you're asking me to recall things without a piece of paper next to me, it ain't going to happen. But anyway.
I was just curious, you know.
I'll email you them later. Anyway, so we have feeling satiated, having these 3 to 4 meals a day as a skill, and feeling satiated so that you're not starving hungry and reaching for the snack, so that your baseline is covered as well.
Yeah.
Then we've got the monsters on the bus metaphor, knowing that good and bad thoughts are going to come all the time, and that's normal, but you got to keep driving that bus and, you know, roll with the curves, and then find out every time a monster comes on, go back to your values, check your values and understand what you stand for. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like label that monster for what it is.
Yeah.
Like either the thought you're having, the feeling you're having, because that actually can help turn down the volume.
Yeah.
It gets us a little bit of distance.
Turn down the volume. Love it. That's the opposite to pumping up the jam then.
Pumping up the jam would be...
Turn down the volume. I was going to sing to you then, Rowan.
Turn down for what?
We should be on the stage, I'm telling you.
We should.
Number three in your list?
That would be distinguishing true hunger. Some of the filters that I like to have people use are that true hunger will build over time. And true hunger you feel in your stomach. And true hunger is usually for like a balanced meal versus like a craving or like stress eating, like emotional eating will usually be, usually don't feel it in your stomach. It usually rises and then falls. They call it urge surfing because it will build and then it actually fades. Whereas true hunger like keeps building. And that's one of the things that people find when they start putting a little bit of distance between like the immediate bad feeling and grabbing a snack is that they assume that the craving and the bad feeling will like keep building, but the cravings actually crest and fade. And then the other thing is a lot of times is that you don't feel like your stomach. And so people will notice like, oh, I was tired or I had a headache or it was actually an emotion or it was actually a thought, like it wasn't a feeling in my stomach.
Yeah.
That's
so true. I mean, I never thought of it that way, but that's exactly what it is. And in my mind, I'm drawing a little graph there. You know, I've got a linear straight line going up for my true building hunger. And then I've got these peaks and troughs going alongside it. Of cravings, and that's it's exactly what it feels like. You know, you don't when you're craving and you just want that piece of cake that's lying on the kitchen counter, you're not doing that because you're hungry.
Right.
Not really. And it's also not going to satisfy your hunger. The cravings and the treats tend not to actually satisfy you like a balanced meal would as well, right? That's the difference in the result of those two eating behaviors as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that brings up a huge point that like what one of the things I want people to take away from this is that when they're really hungry, when they're truly hungry, I want them to eat. I don't want them to be starving. It's normal to be hungry for 30 minutes before a meal. I don't want them to be starving for 3 hours, right? So one of the things that blows my clients' minds is that when they're hungry, they get to eat. They should eat, right? That's a big part of it.
That's really funny. So what you actually mean, you want me to put food in my mouth?
Yeah.
Three times a day. Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, by actually, I'm a big fan. I also coach the same way, a big fan of really understanding the body signals. I think it's a bit of a game changer.
Totally.
And I know there's the cynics out there that will say, well, your body should just know when it's hungry. You shouldn't have to train it. Well, we've lost that awareness, I think. I think that, yes, the body is pretty smart. And yes, it should be able to do that. But somewhere along the line, we've got messed up. And we can retrain ourselves. And I think that that's basically what we need to do. And a lot of the time, it isn't the fact that these people who need to lose weight are just constantly eating junk food. It's that they really don't understand when to eat and why they're eating.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up. I'm so, so, so glad you brought that up. Because like most of the people that are listening, like most Americans have probably spent years ignoring eating when they're not hungry. And ignoring hunger when they're dieting. So I've got clients that have spent decades like not paying attention to hunger signals. So if it takes a year, if it takes 6 months or a year to get really good at noticing when you're really hungry and noticing when you're really full, that's okay. And I also just want to throw out that in terms of like noticing when you're full, there's a lot of sub skills that you can add in, like putting down the fork between bites to slow yourself down or to check in with your stomach halfway through the meal or to notice diminishing returns. Cause I just really want people to get what you just said, that these are skills that have to be learned and they have to be learned incrementally. They have to be learned like skills in the gym. Like you don't deadlift 300 pounds your first day in the gym. You might deadlift a 20-pound kettlebell and eating just enough or noticing when you're full is like deadlifting 300 pounds. It takes working up too.
Yeah, that's great. So that's three really great points then. I think we need to sort of end it there actually there. So we'll go over it again. So I love this. So you starting off with all feelings are okay. It's fine. Yeah. Feel your feelings and we're going to sort out your baseline, have those 3 to 4 meals a day. That's the skill set you want to work with and just really try and sort of feel like satiated in your meals, not too full, not too hungry, and acknowledging these monsters and labeling them and really honing in on your value system. And then distinguishing true hunger. And I think the distinguishing true hunger is so, so great. And I loved your analogy as well, though, like that the true hunger is in your belly. And then the cravings, it's just like almost an urge impulse, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. This is great. Well,
awesome.
Josh, I'm not deleting this podcast. Even with our little interruption of Dan John, which was strange. And then, as usual, it's really great to have you on. Your advice is always so solid. And it's funny because when you talk about things, it just becomes so practical. I'm like, oh my God, that's so obvious. But sometimes the bloody obvious is staring us in the face and we just need to constantly be reminded of it, right? Like it's not that you're saying anything to us that is like crazy out there. It's like you're just using what we sort of should already know and it's instilled in us and just like really pulling it back and like just starting from the basics again.
Yeah, I would hope all of this makes sense and seems really obvious once you hear it. And at the same time, I've got a ton of compassion for the fact that it is the exact opposite of what every other like diet or magazine or like I get that's the opposite of what you've been heard, you've heard probably like your entire life up to this point. But yeah, I hope once you hear it, it tracks pretty simply.
Yeah, I think it's really great. And I think that there's so much. And I think as well, like understanding these principles that you're talking about is like a real investment in yourself as well. It's not just about you losing weight. Like these skills can be transferable in all parts of life. And I've spoke about this with you before, how like just really honing in on my skills has helped me be a better parent and wife, you know, and friend to others, because it just really gets you in the moment. Like instead of like worrying about what's happening or caring about what's happened in the past, like it's just focusing on the now. And that's such an amazing place to be.
That's my favorite thing to ever hear from my clients is that like not having to fight their thoughts and emotions all the time has freed them up to be with their family and people they care about and be present in their lives.
Yeah,
that's like the coolest thing ever.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. As usual, Josh, you're a rock star. We love you.
Thank you. Love being here.
Come on again when you've got smarter again.
Okay.
When you've learned new stuff. And I just like to say thank you to everyone for listening. And there'll be more next week. So tune back to Fit and Chips Chats. Good night for now. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com or her Fit and Chips Facebook page. Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.